Elizabeth Baird is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm good, Tyler. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Running around today, 1 week till the election.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
A lot happening. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to today's conversation. It seems it's timely. It's a timely conversation. We're not talking about the election at all. We're going to a far field extreme from the election today to talk about death.
It's a nice departure from the election. I'll take it.
Yeah. And maybe if you watch 8,000 different ads, death starts feeling like respite from being inundated by negative messages. But, I've wanted to talk about this topic because in the last 6 months, I've been to a lot of memorial services. I feel like every couple weeks I've been telling you, I'm going to memorial service this weekend, lost some close friends and contemporaries of my parents. And going to these memorial services had me thinking about what goes into a good memorial service. Some of them felt more intimate than others. Some felt very meaningful. And so I was thinking that would be an interesting conversation to have about what kind of memorial service would you like to have? And have you been to memorial services that really seem to do a good job of capturing the essence of the person or creating a space to really feel the grief or the memories of the person? And I was thinking about not just a memorial service, but also something we never really talk about, which is what to do with our remains when we die. Because, we have started talking more culturally about how we'd like to die, the process of dying and whether or not to have medical interventions and whether or not to die at home. Like we've become a little more comfortable. A lot of books have been written the last few years about dying with dignity and palliative care. But we don't really talk about what happens to your remains when you're done, if you're going to be buried or cremated or compressed into a carbon necklace, or what actually you would like to have happen with your remains, because it feels like extra morbid to even consider talking about your remains, because that means you're no longer inhabiting that body, if that's what your belief system is. And I think back to when my father-in-law died, I feel like it was almost 20 years ago, and he was sick for a long time and knew that he was dying. And so the conversation around what would you like to have for your memorial service would come up. And he was very cavalier about it. He goes, well, I don't care. I won't be here. It doesn't matter. And part of me thinks that he felt like he was making it easier on everyone by not having a preference. But actually what happened is it caused a lot of stress and anxiety among the family members, because then it left the kids and my mother-in-law to have to decipher what would it be a nice way to remember him, and also where it would be and how to plan it and what would it involve. And then each family member had a different idea of how they wanted that memorial service to go, that remembrance. And so two things might have been happening. Part of it, I think, was his denial that he actually was dying. I don't think he really came to any strong sense that this was the end. He had been a warrior. He was a fighter pilot. I don't think, when you serve in that capacity that you think about death, because I don't think you can. But when it came time for his own death, I don't think he was prepared. Well, that's one piece. But the other piece was that I think he didn't really care what happened once he was gone and felt like that would, make it easier. So having seen what happened with my in-laws and then having attended a lot of memorial services this last summer, I want to visit that conversation. I'm curious to know what other people have planned or if they've talked to anyone about it. Statistically, we don't talk about death and what to do with our remains so much that there's actually a whole organization that's been created called The Conversation to help people have that conversation about what it's called, The Conversation Project. And it's all about helping people, giving people the tools to talk to family members about what they would like to have happen when they die. So we're gonna take a shot at this conversation today and see how willing people are to talk about this. I mean, I'm just looking at the look on your face. It's like, I don't want to talk about this. I'm a young, strapping man. I don't want.
I'm literally sitting here cataloging. I mean, I've already got a plan going.
So oh, you do?
I'm,
okay,
I'm
good.
Sitting here, so you're like, in. I'm thinking about all the things that.
Okay, good. Then I'm glad you're in. I hope everyone's thinking about that. If you haven't thought about it before, and you know, I know it's super cliche because we're, you know, a day before Halloween, and I picked this time not on accident because it is in the keeping of the season, but. I really wanted the conversation to be less around the macabre sense of Halloween, which is, you know, the 31st, and it's a night of darkness and kind of terror and fear and mischief. I look at death less in that light, and I didn't choose this day, this topic for today, because of Halloween. I really chose a topic because of Dia de los Muertos, which is the 1st and 2nd of November that we're coming to, because although the two tend to be connected together because they happen, you know, annually at the same time, they really differ in their tone and the traditions behind Halloween and Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead. Because Day of the Dead is actually a two-day explosion of color and life-affirming joy and parades and dancing and dressing up to honor and show respect for deceased family members. It has a much different vibe to it than kind of the macabre attitude around death and fear and the Grim Reaper that Halloween does. So I'm hoping that today's show aligns itself much more to the Dia de los Muertos idea of showing love and respect. You know, a way of creating this like ritual environment to really think about and interact with the spirit world. Because part of the tradition of Dia de los Muertos is the idea that on these days, your deceased relatives make that journey from the spirit world to revisit living family members. And so there is food that's left and music that's played and altars that are built to as a sign of respect and love and a way of showing remembrance. And so that's where I am when I think about today's topic, is how do we create a way to honor and show love for those who have died? How can we, the person who dies, make that transition, that grieving period, easier for the people that we leave behind? Because if you've been to memorial service, I would imagine, I'm assuming people have the same experience I do, maybe not, you can correct me, but when I attend a memorial service, I go because I want to have one more opportunity to experience the person that has left. I want to feel them in that presence with it, through pictures or stories or being with people that loved them, you know, kind of having that opportunity to send them off. And so if you are the person who has died, how would you like to create a death ritual that allows those people that are left behind to experience you one more time? So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm hoping that this sparks your interest and that you have a few things you'd like to offer. Here's the things that we're going to be thinking about. What makes a good memorial service? Have you been to one? What was it about this memorial service that was so positive? And what would you like to have in yours? Would you like to have a service at all? How would you like to be remembered? And then kind of the overlying question of the day is, what would you like to have done with your remains? I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or check out our Instagram that we're getting more active on. That's Elizabeth_TRT. You can check out our website, TheReluctantTherapist.com, and listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or podcast our shows to listen to previous shows or to share the show with friends. Go to Apple Podcasts or NPR One. Go to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and the shows will be uploaded. And if you have an extra minute or two to leave a review, it helps to share the show with other people who are searching for topics that they might find interesting. So I look forward to exploring the idea of death and what happens to us once we're no longer inhabiting our body. And I look forward to hearing from you. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to start the conversation.
By my window on one cold and cloudy day, when I saw that hearse come rolling for to carry my mother away, will the circle be unbroken?
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And why don't we talk about death and how we'd like to be remembered? Well, I think part of it is that we send this mixed message culturally about death. The first message is live every day like it's your last day on earth. Don't hold back. What are you waiting for? You could die at any moment. Get out there and live your life. But at the same time, we talk about planning your life like you're going to live forever. Make sure you have a savings and think about how you'll care for yourself moving into old age. And so we have this like mixed idea that we should seize the moment to live our lives, but at the same time plan as if we're going to be here for eternity. But we don't talk about that middle piece or maybe that end piece of what we'd like to have happen when we die, because it's uncomfortable. And to be honest, it's not that I throw this conversation out for dinner party topics, because I have mixed feelings myself about wanting to talk about it. A little bit of that. If we talk about it too much, it seems like you're wishing for it to happen. And by no means do I have a death wish or plan on this at any time soon. But I think there is kind of this overall cultural anxiety that we don't want to talk about things that make us uncomfortable or seem kind of frightening, because in some way that will mean that we're wishing it upon ourselves or bringing it too closely. But I'm curious about this topic because there's a lot of mental health that's wrapped up in the fear of dying, that people spend a lot of their life so terrified of death that they kind of hold back from experiencing deep feelings or taking chances or being vulnerable with others, that we spend a lot of time pushing our thoughts or fears of death away. In some ways, it kind of prevents us from being fully present in our life as it is. And so over the last few years, when I talk about death and dying with my students, I refer to this woman's website and web series. Her name is Caitlin Dowdy, and she is a mortician. She's also an activist, and she calls herself a funeral industry rabble-rouser. And in 2011, she founded a death acceptance collective to kind of change how we talk about and experience death. It's called the Order of Good Death. And then I found her through this web series that she does, has done, called Ask a Mortician. And she covers all sorts of topics about death and funerals and burials. And she's very witty and a little sarcastic, but she's also very knowledgeable in trying to normalize the conversations of death. And so I want to take a moment to share with you some of Caitlin Dowdy's wisdom about talking about our reluctance as a culture to talk about death. This is Caitlin Dowdy.
Kind of paradoxical, because you think that to not fear death, the best thing to do would be to lock it up tight in the recesses of your mind, where you also keep your pain, your sadness, and your regret. You just lock it up in there and you're fine,
you're just so happy.
Au contraire, mon frère. The best way to have less fear around dying is to think about what you want done with your dead body. Now, I don't mean logistically, like, I got this price brochure from a local crematory, although that's important too. I mean actually deeply meditating on the thought. Let's pick three popular death options. Conventional burial, an embalmed body in some sort of casket in an above-ground crypt. cremation, and natural burial, just a shrouded body straight in the ground. When I think of the first kind of burial, chemicals injected into me, stuck in a cramped, claustrophobic casket, my only thought is, no, let me out, I don't wanna, no. When I think about cremation, I don't like fire/heat all that much. I don't even like taking muffins out of the oven. Ironic, as I was a crematory operator. Then I think about natural burial. My body decomposing into the soil, bacteria eating me from the inside, bugs eating me from the outside, becoming a mess, losing control, body going out and into a million different directions. And for some reason, this thought brings me an incredible amount of comfort. It doesn't mean that I want to die. I'm not fetishizing death. I also don't think that I'm gonna actually be present when any of this happens. I don't. But cultures all over the world have been doing this thought exercise for thousands of years because something shifts when you think about your own demise in this way. Now, your thoughts on this are likely to be totally different from mine. Many people hate the idea of being food for worms. Maybe you think cremation is clean and quick and your body purified by fire. Maybe you like the idea of being buried in an above-ground crypt because that's where your dad was buried and where his dad was buried, and it's a stable, long-term place for your family to come visit. Your feelings on this are valid and real. You just have to discover what ticks the boxes for you. So go there with your post-mortem adventures. Don't be afraid to follow where they lead. And then,
for heaven's sakes,
tell someone what you decide. If you've really thought about this, I'd love to.
So that's Caitlin Dowdy talking about coming up with our death plan. And I'm curious to know if you have one. Our number is 805-781-3875. How would you like to have your remains handled? Have you thought about that, Tyler? I mean, again, you're young, but I saw you kind of perked up around the topic.
I think about it constantly.
Okay, why is that?
I just think it's interesting to sort of, you know, have an idea of how you want to go and the good time that, you know, you want to have for other. I think about, I want to have a good time for other people that are going to be part of it. I want you to cry a lot and then have a really great time. So I'm imagining a dance party, and mine is, I'm all down for the cremation aspect.
Okay.
Because I want my ashes taken back to New Orleans and have a funeral march to the streets and then go to the levee and then set them into the Mississippi River and then have enough for people. I went to a funeral gathering once that they let everybody take a little bit of someone's ashes in a little box with them, and they said, do it with what you want. And I thought that was really beautiful. And
okay,
some friends sat on it for years, had no idea what to do. People did something with it immediately. And so, yeah, that's sort of my way about it. And then make sure that we have, you know, enough money set aside for people to have a good time with, you know, a good open bar afterwards.
I like that you have your priorities straight on that. And you're talking a little bit about the jazz funeral, which started in New Orleans. And I think about that as well, you know, this idea of having this wonderful part. But mine wouldn't be jazz music, I think. It would have to be different eclectic kinds of music. But the idea behind the jazz funeral is that you have the family and friends march from the home to the church, and then to the cemetery, and the band, the jazz band, is there playing kind of a dirge type of music, very solemn music. And then after the ceremony at the cemetery, they let the body loose, as they call it. They set the body free, and then the music changes tempo and things get very raucous, and then the dancing and the singing and the twirling starts to happen as the family and friends move to wherever the reception is going to be, and other townsfolk or townspeople also join into the dance at that time. So I kind of like that celebratory piece. And I think about the remains part of my body, and I kind of grapple with a couple different things. Part of me would like a natural burial, a green burial, where I'm just kind of in a shroud in a forest and I become compost for the earth and kind of give back to the environment around me. I kind of like that idea. The ego-y part of me, though, that read about a way that you are cremated and they take your ashes and they compress them into like a carbon stone, and then your children can wear that. But I don't think my daughters would be too excited about wearing it, although my granddaughter might find it macabre enough to want to wear her grammy, her nanny, around her neck at some point. But I think about that. But I really do feel that very strongly about that recycling my remains back into the planet to become compost, to not have a carbon footprint. Because as common as cremation is, there are a lot of ecological, environmental issues with that, with the smoke and the chemicals that go out into the air. So something else to consider. What is your death plan? Do you have one? What do you imagine happenings with your remains? And what kind of party, or do you want a party? Do you just want to kind of go off? Because not everyone wants a memorial service. You know, a few friends that we've lost over the years just wanted it to be done. They had no interest in a party. And I have mixed feelings about that, because, again, it's about how the people who are still here have an opportunity to remember you after you're gone and come together with other mourners and share stories. But, again, that's my value system, and we all have to have our own and let our plan be known. 805-781-3875 is our number to be part of the conversation. The phone lines are now open. 805-781-3875. Hi, Marvin.
Hi there.
All right. So the message on my board says you have a student death plan. What does that mean?
Well, you know, it's like a student payment plan for college, but it's about death.
Okay.
So I was just thinking, I thought what you said before at the beginning of the show was very profound about, and it's something I think about all the time, about being ready for death at any time, but also planning as if I'm not going to die. You know, I'm a student, and I'm going to college, and I think, well, if I knew I was going to die in, say, a year, I probably wouldn't be here. And so it's sort of a gamble. Mm-hmm. And in order to sort of rationalize that gamble for me in my head, I have a death plan. I always think about, well, if I were to die, this is what I want. And I tell my loved ones what I want. And it actually feels liberating for me to have that.
So two pieces. Do you mind sharing what that death preference would be? And how did your loved ones handle having you at such a young age say, hey, here's how I'd like to be remembered?
My plan is just to have a natural burial. It's one of the laws of physics, the law of conservation of energy, that no energy is ever lost or gained. It's just transferred from one realm to another, or one physical form to another. And I really, that's a scientific fact. But I also find it comforting on a spiritual level to know that my body would go into the earth and take, you know, feed the earth literally with my energy. And then my family and loved ones, you know, everyone has differing responses to that. I don't think it's, you know, common for an early 20-year-old to talk about death so openly or freely, but I think they've come around to it by now, and it's actually led to a number of good dinner table conversations for our family. It probably wouldn't work for all families, but for ours, it's good.
Yeah, and again, you echo what Caitlin Dowdy said and what I've experienced as a psychotherapist, that when we are able to have these tough conversations with ourselves, with our loved ones, and really think about that, it sets it aside. It kind of frees you from the anxiety about that, you know, worrying about what happens to us, because there's really nothing we can do. But to have some sort of plan, we can set that aside and then get really busy with the efforts of living.
It's one of my fundamental principles that just makes life joyous for me, to know that, like, yes, I may die at any moment, and yet I'm not afraid, because I feel that I'm living, I'm doing the best that I can right now. I think this is one of the most important topics that you could discuss. I'm so glad you are. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to call in, Marvin. Enjoy
Bye.
Your day. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. 805-781-3875. Do you have a death ritual or a death plan? And if you haven't thought about it, here are some of the things that we should think about when it comes to putting together our own death ritual. The first thing is, what do you believe happens when you die? You know, the Buddhists in Tibet believe that once you die, you leave your body, because they believe in transmigration of the soul. So therefore, once the person has died, the body for the Buddhists is an empty vessel. And so in Tibet, they have a ritual called sky burial. And once the person has died, the body is cut into pieces, which sounds kind of gruesome, but it's part of the tradition and the belief system. It's cut into pieces and then placed in an exposed area where animals, maybe vultures, can consume the body. And from their perspective, their tradition, it's considered an act of generosity, allowing the living to benefit from the body once it is no longer needed. So that first thing we have to think about is, what do we believe happens to us when we die? Do we leave our body? Is our body empty? Or do we feel like our soul remains in the body and needs to be treated in that way? What do you believe happens? The next thing you need to think about is, how is grieving observed? How do you believe that grieving works? Is it a long period of time? Do you sit for a certain amount of time? Is there a gathering? Is grieving a private experience? How do you imagine grieving is observed in your family traditions, or your religious traditions, or your community traditions? And then the third thing to question or look at is, if there is a spiritual or religious tradition that you are connected to that has kind of expectations or a format of how we go about the burial or the memorial service or the tradition. And when you've put together those three pieces, you can kind of come together with an idea of how you would like to go. I think what I'm leaning towards, and the thing that I guess I keep coming back to, is the idea of a personal funeral or home death, which probably horrifies my family to hear me say. But, you know, in the late 1980s, when we had this kind of return, this movement to the natural birth, the idea of the natural birth movement, and that women were having doulas and home birthing again, it was kind of a return to what we'd done for centuries and centuries, which was have children born at home with midwives or with elder women in the family there to bring the child in. And at the same time, death happened at home, and the person who had died was cared for and bathed and loved by the family at that time until they were ready for the burial. And so when the natural birth movement started to kind of reemerge, it also kind of led to, in the mid-90s, this reemergence of a natural death movement or personal funeral. And people started wanting to reclaim various aspects of death that had been kind of co-opted at the turn of the century, when death became a big industry, kind of like birth became a big industry, with a lot of medicalization, with a lot of institutions, with a lot of regulations. And so when we looked at the death industry, it started separating people from the opportunity to have closure with their loved ones who had passed. So part of this reclaiming of the traditions of death were being able to keep the body at home for some time rather than having the body whisked away, rejecting embalming, which is draining all the fluid from the person, and kind of adding environmentally questionable chemicals to the body to prettify up the dead for funerals, but to reject that embalming practice and to just let the body be natural. And then the other thing that the natural or the home death movement went to is the idea of personally transporting a loved one's corpse or body to the cemetery or to the crematorium, wherever you were going to go with the remains. Or having a home burial, which is a little more challenging. And in California, it's actually against the law. You can't have a home burial, but in some states you can. But I like this idea of bringing death back home and letting the people care for their loved one once they've passed, by washing the body, by laying the body on ice and rubbing the body with essential oils in some way, and then allowing family members to have the departed there for a couple of days so that they can interact or keep, showing them love, or mostly to help their psyche adjust to the idea that this has happened, that this death is real, that this person has passed. And it gives the person time to adjust to this reality. Because what happens is that when we whisk bodies away and hide them, behind doors, we abruptly stop the grieving process, or we abruptly cause a trauma for the people who are experiencing the loss, because not only are they trying to deal with the loss, but now the body is gone with the person. And to have time with the body allows someone to interact, to say goodbye, to have closure, to come to some sort of acceptance. It doesn't mean that the grieving ends in 3 days when the body is taken from the home. That isn't true, but it helps the psyche adapt to this reality. And it's a much different experience if you raise your children in a home where birth is part of the natural life cycle and death is part of the natural life cycle. Children who grow up in a home experiencing the passing of loved ones and the care for the loved one in the home after they die have greater empathy, greater compassion, less fear of death, less anxiety. I mean, there's a lot of mental health benefits to allowing people to grow up around the experience of death and just see it as a natural part of the cycle. So I really like this idea of the personal funeral or the home death care. Those who are really part of the home death care, the natural death movement, believe that it's a beautiful way of loving and caring for the deceased, to help them move forward and to create a more personal experience towards the cemetery or taking them to be cremated. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist, and I'm wondering about your thoughts. What do you think about your death or death ritual? Have you come up with one? What does it look like for you? If you are interested in a green burial, there are green burial sites in California where you can just be covered in a shroud or a biodegradable casket and then left to compost in the earth. There's places in Mill Valley and Los Angeles, surprisingly, in Joshua Tree, Sebastopol, Sacramento, and Placerville. Have you thought about that? Or do you want to be cremated and do you want to have your remains spread in some particular areas? Are there some places that are special to you? And it was interesting when I was looking at some of the natural burial options, in California, I came a couple that were really, not just California, but natural burial options in the United States. I came across a couple that were really interesting. One was becoming part of an eternal reef. And so if you're someone who would like to nourish the aquatic environment after your death, there's a company in Georgia that uses the crushed bones after cremation, mixing with concrete and then creating reefs off the coast of Georgia to help invigorate the aquatic environment. And then in Crestone, Colorado, they have, and it's the only place in the United States you can have this happen, but they'll do a funeral pyre. And it's non-denominational. Anyone can use the service. The body is simply wrapped in cloth and surrounded by wood and branches of juniper trees. And if the family wishes, they can light the torch themselves, and then the body is just kind of naturally burned. So what do you think about that? 805-781-3875. Hi, Victor, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, yeah, so I just hear you talking about a funeral pyre.
Yes.
That's and all these different options. And, you know, I've just always had a different sort of idea about what I want done with myself.
What would you
and
like?
And didn't know. Didn't know exactly, you know, that, you know, hey, maybe being set out in the woods and just decomposing out in the woods naturally is an option.
Yes. But what's your preference?
You know, I don't know. I saw some movie when I was a kid, and I just thought it was great. I'd love people to have a good party, be on a stack of wood, you know, that's kind of a raft, and then when it's done, you know, they just light it on fire and push you out and send you down the river or into the ocean.
Viking funeral.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was funny because, not funny, but my husband has mentioned that being his preference. And so when I was doing my research, I was trying to find some place that actually offered that type of funeral, which I didn't come across. So if you find one, let me know.
You know, I've never actually looked, but it kind of sparked me at my interest in looking to see what the different options are.
And when you think of a memorial service, a good party, what are the things that make a good party for you, a good memorial service? What would you want to have there?
You know, definitely music, dancing. Of course, and most celebrations involve alcohol, so I guess why not? Yeah, you know, the main thing is an attitude. I'd really like people to say, hey, you know, you lived a good life. He wasn't perfect, but, you know, we loved him, and we're going to keep his memory, but we're going to send him off.
On his Viking ship.
Yeah.
Well, Victor, so, I hope you continue thinking about this, because part of the challenge or the homework from today's show is to really come up with that plan so that you can pass that on to your loved ones so that they know. And when you're including, you know, the party plans, make sure you talk about the food that you would prefer and what kind of music. Are there songs that really stand out for you? Like, as much detail as you can give them, because when your loved ones are grieving your loss, the last thing we want is to have them stressed about making sure they remember all the things about you. So the more detailed the plan, the better. And thank you for taking the time to call and share that. The Viking Funeral. 805-781-3875 is the number to share your thoughts. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And is it Sonny?
Hi, Elizabeth. Yeah, it's Sonny Brown.
How are you? Nice to hear from you.
I just wanted to give my two cents on encouraging people to have the conversation, like you were saying earlier. I worked as a volunteer and then as a staff member for Hospice SLO over the last 20 years. And right now, I work with Neptune Society, giving people a chance to make their final arrangements with cremation. So I've been around this conversation for 25 years with the public. And the people that have a hard time talking about it now, when they're healthy, have even a harder time talking about it if someone is terminally ill. Mm-hmm. So the sooner the better.
And what do you find is the kind of a common theme? Like, is there some kind of common wish that people have, or are there a lot of different varieties in how people want to be remembered or be buried? Or
there are a lot of varieties. And what I really appreciate about people finally talking about it, and sometimes the first time they talk about it is when I'm sitting with them and they discover from each other as a couple or as a family that they had no idea what the other person was interested in. Mm-hmm. Some people with Neptune Society, of course, they offer scattering at sea. I've had people say, I'm afraid of the water. I wouldn't want my ashes put in the water, even though logically they know those are cremated remains. There's just ash there. Mm-hmm. They still don't want that choice. Others, that's the best thing in the world, is to think of going out to sea. And then the things you were saying earlier about being out in the woods or whatever it is an individual has on their heart and mind, we wouldn't know it unless they have a chance to say it.
And what do you think about the idea of the home funeral and keeping the deceased in the home for a couple of days so that the family can be with them and wash them and tend to them and come to accept the passing? Have you had families do that?
Yes, and like you, I've found it to be a very beautiful thing. I've personally participated in one of those maybe 18 years ago with a friend of mine. And again, it depends on the comfort level of the family. You're going to find some people say, I want them out of the house the minute they're passed because I'm so uncomfortable with the idea of a dead person in my house, while others do exactly what you just described, that they want to spend time with them. The family gathers, friends have a chance to pay respects. They have time for prayer or solitude or meditation around the person. And also, as you said, to bathe them. The one I participated in all those years ago, they brought things that were the woman's favorite things. So leaves from trees that she loved, flowers that she loved, stones from rivers and placed by the beach that she loved. It was a marvelous experience. I loved it.
It sounds beautiful. Sonny, thank you for sharing your story. And thank you for reminding me about the Neptune Society so people can know where to reach out when they want to get more information.
You're welcome. And thank you for doing this program today.
It's my pleasure. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We're going to take a break, catch our breath, and come back to continue our conversation today, talking about death and our death rituals.
If I die young, bury me in satin, lay me down on a bed of roses, sink me in the river at dawn, send me away with the words of a love song. Uh-oh, uh-oh. Lord, make me a rainbow, I'll shine down on my mother, she'll know I'm safe with you when she stands under my colors, oh, and laughing on what you think it ought to be, you know, ain't even gray, but she buries her baby, the sharp knife of a short life. Well, I've had just enough time. If I die young, bury me.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about our death rituals as a society. And have you talked about a plan for what happens when you've died and what you'd like to have happen with your body or how you would like to be memorialized? What would you like to have at your party? And our number is 805-781-3875. Hi, Rod, you're on the air. What's on your mind today? Rod, are you there?
This is Judith. Are you looking for me?
Oh, hi, Judith. I'm happy to talk to you. Rod, I'll come back to you.
Okay. Well, hi, greetings. I have a lot to say. I tuned into this show sort of by accident because I got off work early today. I'm a school teacher in the King City, Greenfield area.
Well, thanks for
joining. And, boy, there's so much I really want to throw out there. So let me put a few thoughts out. One of them, and I think it's the most important, is to remember that memorials really are for the living. They are, as you said, to have a chance to make that transition into this person we knew or loved or even admired from a distance is no longer going to be with us. And I really want to stress for everyone what I learned the hard way, which is the importance of including children in those rituals. I come from a secular Jewish family, and when my elders died, especially the grandparents who I was close to, my very well-meaning parents thought it was best for us not to go through that and to not have to sit through any kind of memorial. And one set of grandparents was very secular and didn't want any kind of memorial service. And I carried that grief because I never got to say goodbye well into adulthood. And it wasn't until I was an adult around age 50 and my aunt died at home and I brought my six-year-old with me when my aunt was dying at home to say goodbye and included her in any rituals we had, you know, that I really realized that children, as well as the rest of us, we needed time to say goodbye. So I would say if you're writing your own death plans, don't try to dictate too much. If there's something that's really important, say it, but really stress that what's important is for people to be able to say goodbye. What I would put in my post-death instructions is a reminder to everyone I love that I love them.
Oh.
That's probably the most important thing I have to impart. Now, I have known people who lost a child to suicide, which must be one of the most difficult losses there is. And I know people who, like this carbon necklace, chose to have the cremated ashes of their loved ones who died tattooed into their arm. That's not me.
So, Judith, I'm curious to know, though, do you have your own personal plan? What do you wish to do with your remains?
About what kind of decisions you want made about your health, with if you can't speak for yourself, and everyone over 18 should have one.
Thank you, Judith. I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I can tell that you have a lot to share, but I need to jump because we have a lot of calls today. But please do call back in again, and thanks for tuning in. And Rod, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Rod.
Yeah, I wanted to start by saying that almost every one of your shows speaks to me in depth. And I don't call that often because I feel like, oh, I could just go on and on and on about all of the things that you talk about. So I do really appreciate all of the stuff you do on the radio.
Thank you.
Okay. And so I could go on today for five different things that you've talked about that I've had experience with. So I'll let you kind of decide how we move forward how it turns. But I think the thing I wanted to mention first was... So my wife died 10 years ago, and I saw her when she died, and I saw her dead body. And then, I don't know, maybe a week later, I don't know when it was, but my mother said, well, you know, my grandparents lived with us, and when they died, they stayed in the house for at least a week, and we got to be with them. And I said, oh, wow, I didn't even know that was even possible. I just didn't know that could even happen. And I wish that we would have done that. And the reason I say that is because I did see my wife's dead body, and I feel like if I didn't see that, I would have questioned it later when I was really, really missing her, thinking maybe there's a chance that she's alive and I didn't know it. Maybe I could see her. Maybe I could see her again. But because I did see her body, my mind knew, no, she was not here.
And then you touch on that piece that I really want to read, Eric, because I did mention it earlier, that there is a profound amount of shock and trauma that your psyche is trying to deal with when a loved one dies. And it takes time for our psyche to process it. It takes days. And if you don't have that opportunity, as you mentioned, it can be frozen in you and you have a hard time moving forward. So I'm glad you brought that back up. What else?
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to mention was I do have a complete plan, as my wife did too. And we outlined music and food and all that. But one thing that my kids and I did,
which
is a little bit different than she said, but we did this anyway, is we divided lots of her ashes up into baggies, and we took them everywhere we went. And everywhere we went, we would throw them out so that she'd be part of the area where we were. Mm. And actually, we still have some. We haven't done that for a while, but we plan to. And that was never outlined, but I really like that, and I think my kids really liked that too. So they got to participate in that.
And also, you have girls, right?
A boy and a girl.
Boy and a girl. As they've grown too over the last 10 years, they are developmentally having different experiences of losing their mom. So to be able to still have a piece of her in different time periods of their life, I think is really helpful developmentally, so that she is still part of them as they grow and mature.
Yes, I really do believe that. Yes,
I think overall, what I'm hoping is that people think about this idea that our death is a way of changing our relationship with the people that we love. That it doesn't end. That when someone dies, that love doesn't end and go away and get buried somewhere. We have to transform that love and be able to pay attention to and love the deceased in a different way. And that's what you're describing, is how you're able to continue honoring your wife's life.
After
her death.
Can I make another comment?
One more.
Okay, one more. The other is we have an annual party.
Oh, nice.
And it's really nice. My kids love it. My kids always say, you really have to do this. You have to do this. But I have to tell you that some people in our family, I think they don't agree with it and don't like it. They kind of feel, oh, you've got to get over it. Come on, not again.
Right.
And I wish that in our society it wasn't like that.
Well, and it's, interesting, because Dia de los Muertos is all about having that party every single year. And that's an ancient tradition, thousands of years old. So it's interesting that our very young society that adores youth would, want that to be something that we ignore.
Yes.
Well, Rod, I appreciate you. I know you have lots of thoughts on it, but I appreciate you sharing those. And I think it's food for thought moving forward. Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about having a death plan or a death ritual. And do you have one? 805-781-3875. Jerry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jerry. What's on your mind today?
I'm poor folk, and I don't have much money. So if I want to I want to be buried. I don't want to be cremated.
Okay.
What can I do about that? Well, I wouldn't mind just, like you say, taking out in the woods and leaving her out. Mm-hmm. But that ain't going to happen. I wouldn't mind if they dug a hole in the back 40 and put me in there, but that probably, they don't allow that, do they?
You can't do it on your own property in California. But
you can.
You cannot. You can, you cannot home bury in California. There are a few states you can, but not here. But there are places that you can have the natural burial with the biodegradable box that you're, buried alone, but you decompose. And, Jerry, I don't know. I don't have an answer about financial help with our burial plans. And so I'm going to look into that and see if I can find out something about it. But I would encourage you to talk to someone at the Neptune Society. Sonny Brown called.
They still cremate you.
But they might actually have information of how you can get other services, because that's their business. And so
I talked to them before.
They didn't have any other options?
I have talked to them.
Okay. And the other one is social services, to see if they have financial help with our burial plans. But I don't have an answer, Jerry, and I apologize. But if I get an answer, if you leave your number with Tyler, we'll get it to you. Okay, so hang on the line, and Tyler will get your number. Thank you for calling. I feel bad I don't have that information, Tyler, but maybe we can help out. Deborah, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I've donated my body to the science care community.
We don't talk about that much anymore. What made you think about that?
Reading about the miracles they can do in medicine today, mm-hmm. and I wanted to advance that for the benefit of all mankind. And they take your body and they do what they're interested in, what they're researching, and then your family gets your ashes back to cremate, to spread.
And so what inspired you to make that choice? Did someone else do it before you, or how did you even look into, how did you know who to contact?
I asked one of my neighbors because she has done it, and I was extremely interested. I just got done reading an article in National Geographic where they're transplanting faces onto people now. It's just amazing what they can do, and I would just like to be a part of that.
That's beautiful. And do you have any thoughts about a memorial service, a party after you're gone?
Oh, yeah, I'm writing that out.
They include food and dance?
Right, music, definitely.
Well, I appreciate you reminding me about donating our bodies to science. And was there? Do you know that agency off the top of your head?
It is Science Care Community. They have a 24-hour number if you would like it.
Great. Do you have it?
800-417-3747.
Thank you so much, Deborah. I appreciate you calling and sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about plans for our bodies once we have deceased and what kind of party we might like to have, because having those plans written out for our loved ones is a great way of helping them to cope with the grief of losing us in our lives. Dawn, thanks for calling in.
Yes.
What's on your mind today?
I happened to be friends with Rod and turned on the radio right when he was speaking, and he was actually at my Day of the Dead annual party for the first time on Sunday, and I've been participating in offering an altar at my home for many, many years, and we've also put on, and I think children should be included. It's such an important experience to be able to grieve annually, and I've been teaching about the Day of the Dead for 20 years, but it wasn't until I personally put up my own altar in my home and put photos out and put out Wrigley spearmint gum that my grandpa gave me and silver dollars that my great uncle used to give me. And I have to tell you, my children can't wait to put the altar up. They've been doing it 10 years, and every time they put up my great-grandma's photo, they know her name, they know a story about her. And it's a way to pass on our ancestry. And at Pateka Elementary School for, 8 years, we put on a Day of the Dead event. And it became, instead of a Halloween, because Halloween is no longer something they do in elementary schools, but to incorporate a Day of the Dead in California with all the Hispanic families is a beautiful tradition.
Absolutely.
So I can't, because the children get a chance to grieve, understand, and no one talks about death. Octavio Paz says, for the resident of New York, the word death burns the lips, but for the resident of Mexico, they caress it, they sleep with it. It's one of their most permanent loves and favorite pastimes. And to be able to experience that on an annual basis and live with that cycle of life and death is so beautiful. And just wanted to let everybody know that November 3rd, this Saturday, I don't know if you've mentioned it, is going to be a Day of the Dead event at Mission Plaza from 10 to 3.
Thank you. I did not know that. Thank you. I appreciate it, Dawn. And I'm glad that we keep reiterating the importance of including children in our death rituals, in our death process, because children are naturally curious about life and death. They should experience birth. They should experience death. If it becomes a part of their life from a young age, they'll never fear it because it's always just something that they were around and they saw. We breed fear and terror and anxiety about the things that we keep secret. And so the more we can make death a natural part of our life experience, the more we'll all have greater peace, and especially for our children. The last thing we want is for our children to be terrified about something as natural and as certain as death. And Carl, thanks for calling in. I understand you haven't answered to Jerry's question.
Yes, I do, perhaps.
Okay.
If he's a veteran, he can be buried in one of the national cemeteries that we have around the country. The closest one that I can think of is on the way to Mojave.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, if he dies as an indigent, as long as he doesn't have family here in California, where the law says that the family is responsible, he can be buried by the county, who will provide him with a cremation. Now, that's not something that he wanted.
Right, that's the problem.
The surest thing for him to do is to buy a burial plan, and then regardless of what happens, he can be buried, you know, at the location of his choice.
See, and I think that, thank you, Carl, I think that continues to be our dilemma. And Tyler, I definitely, you and I need to do a little sleuthing on this, because what happens when someone doesn't have the money for a burial plan, but they don't want to be cremated? We don't know. So I think we'll put that to task a little bit, and we'll come back with the information either on the show or post it on our Facebook page. If you'd like to post a question there, it's The Reluctant Therapist. Or you can also find us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send me questions to Elizabeth at The Reluctant Therapist.com. We can share and exchange information that way. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast to listen at your convenience to at NPR or NPR One or Apple Podcasts. But as always, I appreciate being able to open up the phone lines and share these conversations with you and talk about these things that we don't necessarily talk about easily or openly in our family or in our community conversations. So I hope that this is something that you'll carry into your conversations with your loved ones. We do have holiday seasons upon us, and it might be a good time to actually broach that conversation, especially if you have young people in the family, to start making them feel comfortable and aware that death is a part of the family process. As always, I appreciate you supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back next week to continue the conversation.
Child born in this world, carry on, yeah, yeah. all I ask of dying is to go naturally. You only wanna go naturally. Here I go. Ha! Hey, hey, here come the devil right behind. Look out, children. Here he comes. Here he comes. Hey, don't wanna go by the devil. Don't wanna go by demon. Don't wanna go by Satan. Don't wanna die uneasy. Just let me go naturally. And when I die, and when I'm dead, dead and gone, there'll be one child born in a world to carry on, to carry on.